Hello, this is Clarissa Bell, and welcome to the weekly teleclass. And in this teleclass, I will be discussing a topic designed to deepen our consciousness and awareness. I'll be talking about the science of the cards, and I'll be giving readings to those in the class, as time permits, who would like them. So, as usual, I always start off with a prayer. So if you're able to, close your eyes and just become aware of your breathing. And you need to do nothing but just relax and take in these words. We ask for supporting consciousness and assisting us in awakening and opening our hearts and inspiring and empowering us to experience the truth about ourselves. We ask for support in feeling our connection with the essence of everyone and everything in the universe at all times so that we can truly know and feel we are one. And so it is. Today's topic will be discreating negative identity masses. Last week, I went over negative identity masses and how they're formed and how they get activated, and I'm just going to just do a brief recap about that. A negative identity mass is really a mass of energy that has three main components to it. One is a negative identity. Remember, identities are creations about ourselves. They're definitions about ourselves. I am smart. I am stupid. I am wise. I'm powerful. I am not lovable. They're definitions about who we believe we are. And so a negative identity mass would be an identity that counter-creates our original essence. So it would be, I'm not smart, I'm stupid, I'm not powerful, and I'm not lovable. So it consists of a negative identity and a creation of bad or an opinion of bad about that identity. So I am stupid, and it's really bad to be stupid, okay? And then that generates a negative emotion. It generates an emotional charge because anytime we have a creation or an opinion that something is bad, generally we want to change, destroy, or get rid of that which we believe is bad, and that creates resistance. And resistance just results in a negative emotion, and that, then we use that negative emotion to try to change, destroy, get rid of, suppress, make it be different. So a negative identity mass consists of a negative identity plus an opinion that that identity is bad. It's bad to be that way, that I've created myself to be. And that generates a negative experience, a negative emotion. And then we use that negative emotion to try to do something about the way we have created ourselves to be. And this creates a negative identity mass, like a mass of energies. And over time, what happens is because we keep resisting, we keep energizing with this negative energy, and it just creates like a ball, just creates layers of negative energy from continuing to resist it over time. So that's a negative identity mass. And also, too, a negative identity mass can be a cluster of identities. It doesn't have to just be one identity. It could be something like I am bad and it's bad to be bad and nobody will like me, and that means I'm unlovable because I'm bad. So you've got I'm bad is one identity. Oh, and I just wanted to make a distinction here that I am bad is an identity in and of itself, and then there's the creation of bad, and those are two different things. So I am bad can be just an identity, and then the opinion, the creation of bad, is when we judge something as bad. So another way of saying creating our opinion of bad is like judging it, okay, having a negative judgment about it. So there's the identity I'm bad, and then there's the creation of bad, and those are two separate things. So you could have an identity mass that has, you know, a cluster of identities all wrapped together and all connected together, okay? So I just wanted to make sure that, you know, it doesn't have to just be one. And frequently, it's not just one. Frequently, there are a number of identities clustered around some original event or clustered around some determination we made probably before we even could think about it. Okay, so that is what a negative identity mass is, and when we learn to discreate these masses, we step by step we stop. We put an end to the negative emotional pain that gets generated from all of these, from this mass, and eventually we free ourselves from the compulsion to suppress the pain with even more negative behavior. And then we will eventually, over time, be able to clean out these near masses. And then when we do that, we pass into a new level of consciousness and permanent joy. So that's the benefit of actually learning how to discreate these masses. If we do anything else with it, if we, you know, if we suffer through it, which is what we normally do, resist it, deny it, ignore it, suppress it with chemicals or foods, try to distract ourselves with some external activity, shopping or television or sex or relationships, romance, whatever you want to call it, eventually, if we do that, the negative identity mass will eventually subside back into our subconscious. Remember, these masses reside in our subconscious. They're like they're latent there, and they usually we don't even really realize that they're there most of the time until some trigger event sort of pushes them from our subconscious into our conscious awareness. A lot of people say, oh, well, the same thing for this that a lot of people know the phrase to is my button was pushed, or he pushed my button, or she pushed my button, or this thing, you know, pushed my button. It's the same thing. Some outside event is triggering the identity that's already within the subconscious. It's just buried beneath our awareness, and that event brings that identity forward. It moves it from our subconscious into our conscious awareness. Okay, and that's called the trigger event. And so it's activating the near that's sort of been latent in our subconscious. So when a near gets triggered, and if we don't really discreate it, and we do what we normally do, which is because most of us haven't really been taught, most of us don't really know how to actually dissolve or discreate these negative identities. A lot of us don't even realize what they are. So, what you know, we do our normal resisting, denying, suppressing, and eventually it'll just subside. So, and when that happens, basically we've done nothing to eliminate the mass. It will, again, subside back into our consciousness and just sort of just be there ready to be activated again at the next trigger event. So the secret to life is really to learn how to discreate or dissolve these identities, to change ourselves at the deepest interior of our being, which is our identity, our belief about ourself. So the secret is to learn how to dissolve, discreate these identities, and to create, actually, to discreate the negative ones or the ones that no longer serve us, and to then learn to energize the positive ones. Okay, and this ability to discreate the negative identities and create positive identities is the basic ability that we need to handle life and to really achieve lasting love and happiness. It's the ability to control our being, which is the first and most important element of the causal sequence of life. Remember the causal sequence of life? Be who we're being, which is our identity. Who we're being, I am, actually creates what we feel, which then creates what we think, which then creates how we relate and what we do, and that ends up, and then we end up having, okay? So that determines what we have. So the B is the first and the most important element in this causal sequence of life. It's the element that determines everything else. Okay, so now we're going to go into discreating. Now the first thing we want to do when we want to discreate is, we need to find the negative identity. So yes, we get triggered, and what happens is some event happens. We get triggered, and we experience it as some emotion that comes up. Okay, so for example, I'm gonna list some events that, you know, it's just some normal life events. Okay, that may trigger us. Okay, when our children don't do what we ask them to do, we often will get triggered by that, and we'll often feel anger or frustration. Okay, so and just remember, behind every negative emotion, there is a negative identity, okay? So, you know, if you're feeling any kind of negative emotion, there is definitely a negative identity behind it. And so we use the emotion to find the negative identity. And I think it was a couple weeks ago, I went over some of the negative emotions, And I might just go over them briefly again here. And in that talk, I talked about some of the identities that kind of go with the emotion, so it becomes easier to be able to identify the to find the identity. So anger is basically it's present time anti-power. Okay, it's I could not prevail, and if I can maybe attack it, I still have power. So you know that there's some kind of anti-power there. My child did not do what I asked them to do, and it creates anger in me. And underneath that anger is some identity of I could not get them to do what I wanted. I didn't have the power to get them to do what I want to do. So you can begin to get the drift of this. Another one is, you know, when someone yells at you, what do you feel? Do you feel fear? Fear is future power. I'm not going to be able to handle it when someone is angry at me. I'm not powerful enough to stand up to this person or to be present when this person is displaying this kind of energy towards me, okay? And or someone yells, do you might get angry back, okay? So that's enough. That's so you notice what feeling comes up, and then from there you can kind of ask yourself. So another one would be I don't have enough money. Many people go into fear and worry about not having enough money. And so worry, again, is anti-power and anti-value. I'm not good enough. I'm not powerful enough to create the money I need. I'm not good enough. I don't deserve to have money. There are different identities around. And so when a trigger event happens, this is just an example of some of trigger events. Well, first of all, what you want to know is that we are never really upset for the reason we think, okay? We think we're upset because we don't have the money. We think we're upset because someone yells at us. But really, we are upset. We are always upset because of how we feel about ourselves in relation to the event, okay? I don't have enough money, and it's not so much that I don't have enough money. It's how I feel about myself because I don't have enough money. I'm not good enough. I'm not powerful enough. And this is really the cause of our emotional pain, this identity. Remember, the identities are the starting point of everything, okay? So it's really important to find the identity, but we find the identity through the emotion. So once the trigger event happens and you ask yourself, you know, you feel certain things, you're triggered, and it brings up certain feelings in you, some negative feeling, and you know there's an identity behind it. And what you would do is you would ask yourself, how do I really feel about me in this situation? Who am I that I feel this way? Who am I? I can't get my child to do what I ask them to do, and I feel really, like, frustrated and angry. And who am I that I feel frustrated and angry about that? Oh. And then you, once you ask the question, you then go, you stay, you don't want to go into your mind. You want to go into your experience of that feeling, because underneath that feeling, if you really let go of your mind and you ask that question, you let go of your mind and you experience what you're experiencing, something will come up. You will get some information, some insight, and it will be some statement, oh, I'm bad. I'm not good enough. I'm pathetic. I'm powerless. I'm weak. Whatever it is, but it's really feeling. You want to go into experience, okay? So we want to stay out of mind. Going into mind is actually a common defense mechanism, fleeing to the mind. Many of us will flee to our minds to get out of our experience. So because focusing on thinking can oftentimes reduce the attention to negative feelings and experiences. So it's important in this process to really allow yourself to feel your experience, because the answers, the information you're seeking are in the feeling, the feelings. It's in your experience itself. Okay, so first step is we need to find the identity that's behind the negative emotion, okay? But this is actually the most important, because to just create anything, we really have to take responsibility that we are the creator, okay? You cannot discreate anything. You cannot discreate a creation if it's not yours. If you are assigning cause or ownership to anything other than yourself, to an outside agent, to anything other than self, you will not be able to discreate the identity. Okay, let me say that again. This is the most important step. You have to take responsibility that you are the creator of your identity and you are the creator of your experience. If you don't, you will not be able to discreate the experience or the identity or that reality, okay? So that's most important thing. We must acknowledge that we are the creator of our experiences. Only creators can discreate their creations. If you created it, see, this is good news, because if you created it, then you can discreate it. And furthermore, no creation is or can be bigger or more powerful than its creator. So that's another thing we want to remember. I'm going to state some things through this process that will help you in the discreation process. And one of the most important ones is I am the creator, and what I can create, I can discreate. Another one is no creation can be bigger or more powerful than that who created it. And since I am the creator, no creation, nothing that I create, no reality, no creation, no creation, no, which is an identity, because an identity is a reality that we have created. It's created reality. It's not truth, but it's created reality. No creation can be bigger than the creator. So no creation can be bigger than me who created it. And that's going to be an important point to keep remembering, to keep telling yourself. Because a lot of us, you know, first of all, we don't really know that we are the creator, and we don't know who we are, because part of coming into this human experience is creating ourselves to be the opposite, which is creating ourselves to be powerless and not cause of our experience. But just because we've created ourselves to be that way temporarily doesn't mean that we're not the cause of our experience. We are. Even while we're denying that we are the creator, we are the creator, and we are creating all the time. Even if we're, you know, creating through ignorance, we're still creating, because we are made in the image and likeness of God, and we are endowed with all the creative powers. So even though we come here, we create ourselves to be opposite, and we believe for a while that we're not the creator, we're still the creator, because that's who we are, okay? We just are creating unconsciously, okay? So that's the first step. Very, very, very important, okay? So no creation can be bigger than ourselves, which created it, okay? And some of the things you want to begin to ask yourself, like when you're exploring this, especially if you're new to this, I mean, this might be kind of like challenging. It can be challenging to go, you know, I created it. Why would I create something so painful as this? But you can begin to ask yourself a few questions. So when you begin to go into your experience and you begin to feel and you begin to ask yourself these things, one of the things you want to ask yourself, where did this creation of I'm not good enough, whatever the identity is, where did this creation, this reality that I've been living inside of, come from? That's one question. Who decided this reality? Who decided this about me? I mean, you know, did God come down and send you a telegram and say, you know, you are this way? So who created it? Who decided? Who created it? Who decided? Where did it come from? These are questions to ask yourself to begin to take creator responsibility, okay? Okay, so we got the creator responsibility, you know, creating, you know, being the creator. We have finding the ears. And then the next step is the law of discreation is experiencing. Our experience is what actually discreates it. When we experience what we are experiencing, it actually flows it out. It actually discreates it. If we allow ourselves to experience anything in our consciousness, this is all done within the interior of our being, in our consciousness, deep within our being, okay? So anything we allow to ourselves to experience in our consciousness, any thought, any emotion, even any resistance, will actually begin to dissolve it and discreate it. So to discreate our negative identities, we need to relax, open our feeling, and let ourselves experience being the way we are in the moment. We open our feelings. So we want to, once we have the identity, we want to let go of our mind and our thinking and our analyzing, and just we can tell our being, and our being understands this, to just open feeling. And we open our feeling, and we simply feel the energies, letting them come into our consciousness and experiencing them. And you can just feel it, okay? You want to surrender to the truth of your experience, no matter what it is. it's valid because you have created it that way, and it's valid. Whatever you create is valid. You want to surrender to the truth of your experience, allowing it to be as it is, letting go of all denial and resistance, and allow yourself to be as you created yourself to be. See, all these years we've been denying and resisting and fighting ourselves, fighting these parts of ourselves and these aspects of ourselves that we created, that we have judged as bad and created as bad, and we've pushed them and we suppressed them. And all our lives we've been spending tremendous energy resisting them. Okay? And you can notice how it doesn't work anyway. I mean, they are always still like there under the surface, okay? And we really feel them when we get triggered, okay? So now that hasn't worked, so we're going to change tactics here. So instead of resisting them, instead of pushing them away, we're now going to reverse that, and we're going to do the opposite. And we're simply going to explore these creations, these negative identity creations, and we're going to live it just for the time that it takes to fully experience it so that they can dissolve and discreate, okay? So another name for this process of discreation is called integration. We integrate, we learn to integrate with those parts of ourselves that we have been denying and resisting and avoiding. And through this discreation, we learn to love ourselves in a new way, in a deeper way. And we love ourselves by ceasing all the resistance to our creations, including our creation of bad. And this puts us into space. I did a class on space, the beginning of love. Space is the beginning of love. And you can go back and listen to that if you want more details on that. But when we cease all resistance and we allow ourselves to just open our feeling and be with our experience in the context of no creation is bigger than that which created it. It cannot harm us. It cannot hurt us. We are bigger than it. This puts us into space, into acceptance of how we are. Space is the beginning of love, and love draws near to and wants to be with and to experience and to feel that which it loves. We begin to learn to love these parts of ourselves and these creations that we have pushed aside, that we have judged as bad. Okay, and so this is what we're going to begin to do, and you have to trust yourself that the expanded part of you, the part of you that's always connected to the one, will only bring you what you're ready to experience at the time. Even though there may be a part of you that thinks, oh, I'm not going to be able to do this, trust that your expanded self, your higher self, whichever word you want to use, it doesn't matter, will only bring you that which you are ready to work with. And it's going to do it a bit at a time. Okay, because of the energies that we have built up over years, it can be kind of massive. So it's only going to do it layers and steps and blocks at a time. Okay, so we move from a condition of, as before, of anti-love. And anti-love is avoiding, resisting, hating, pushing away, suppressing. Anti-love is just the negative energy that gets generated from resisting. So we move from that condition, which we have been doing, which hasn't really been working, we move to a state of love, accepting, approaching, being with, and experiencing these negative identity. I'm going to call them realities. It's not truth. They're just realities that we have created. They're temporary realities. And a reality is anything that you actually experience, okay? Okay. So when we finally surrender to sit in it, we feel like, and here's a paradox. I'm going to tell you a paradox. So all these years we've been pushing away, and then now we're going to change tactics, and now we're going to surrender to what's there. And so when we finally surrender, when we finally admit to ourselves how we see how we've created ourselves, or how we've created parts of ourselves, we each have positive identities and negative identities that make up our being. Okay. So we kind of love the positive identities, and we kind of push away or resist or hate the negative ones. But when we finally allow ourselves to be these negative identities as we're doing this process, and we sit in it, and we allow it, and it feels like, oh, I'm bad, and that feeling of, oh, I'm bad, and you feel like in that moment you're right in the middle of it, and it feels like it's never going to end. Paradoxically, that's what actually begins to discreate it. So if you can remember the paradox of when I allow myself to feel fully how I've been creating myself with these negative identities, and I may be feeling some of the negative emotion from them, you actually, see, our tendency before is to run from that, but actually if you can just shift and open yourself to that feeling and know that the paradox is that that is actually what begins to discreate it, when you allow yourself to feel it fully. And I can tell you from many hours of doing this myself, it will at times feel like, oh, is this never going to end? But that's how you know, oh, right, I'm right in the middle of it. That's how you know you've let yourself feel it, okay? So now the other aspect to this is, hold on 1 second. Okay, so the other aspect of this is resistance, okay? So remember, so when we experience anything, the experience of it actually allows it to discreate, okay? That's sort of the rule number one of discreating. The other rule is resistance. Anything we resist causes persistence. So when we're discreating, one of the main things we want to do is if we found an identity, a negative identity, and we go to sit in it, and there's a lot of emotion that comes up, you can be sure that there's resistance around it, okay? So if there's a huge emotional charge, if it feels really, really difficult and challenging, there is resistance, okay? And since resistance causes persistence, we must transcend our opinion of bad. Remember, our opinion, our creation of bad actually causes us to resist being this identity. Okay, and so to do that, we must if there's a lot of a negative charge, then we know there's resistance. And the first step then is to actually discreate the resistance. And we do that by experiencing our resistance, experiencing our creation of bad, how bad it is. So it would go something like, I'm bad and it's bad to be bad, and this I'm bad, it's bad to be bad creates a whole emotional charge. It's bad to be bad, and if it's bad to be bad, I can't be bad. I can't let people know I'm bad. And then you generate all of this negative energy, and so we take negative actions trying to hide ourselves or hide what we think is bad from other people. And it could just be, you know, different people do it in different ways. It could be we're going to be nice to people and be accommodating to people, because if we're accommodating to people, then maybe people won't ever find out that deep down I'm really bad. And that negative energy just keeps getting generated and generated because we're not really even living our lives fully. So that's just one example, okay? But the idea of being bad, it can be so bad we can spend our lives trying to resist that, to not be that, and that generates over time a lot of anti-love. And what I've discovered, at least, I mean, I have this creation myself, as I discovered just recently, I had this huge anti-love towards myself for being bad. Like, I, like, hated myself for this idea that I thought was bad. So resistance is a big part of this creation. Actually, I might save this for next week. I'm going to see if there's anybody on the line who wants a reading, because I'm looking at the time. So hold on. Hi, is there anybody on the line who wants a reading? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi?
Hi.
Hi, what's your...
Hi, this is Kevin. No, thank you.
Oh, hey, Kevin. No, thanks. Okay, anybody else? Okay, well, I guess I'm going to continue with my discreating then, okay.
Conference muted.
Okay, so resistance. Okay, now, this is important because I, you know, in my experience, the resistance is the hardest part to actually really work with. Once you actually get the identity and you release resistance, the identities just, they're quieter energies. They're more subtle. And when you actually allow yourself to sit in them, they feel just like flavors of emotions. They're not the intense fireworks. The intense firework of emotions are all from the resistance that's been built up over time. So when you learn how to actually work with the resistance and discreate the resistance, it'll become a lot easier to discreate the identities. But it is it's a skill to learn how to work with the resistance. Okay, so I'm going to give you some guidelines on how to work with resistance. Okay, so since resistance is created from our opinion that something is bad or not, a way we have created ourselves to be is bad, we first need to let go of this idea of bad. And I did a whole show on the creation of bad, so you can go back and download and listen to that. But just to recap, nothing is good or bad. Everything is actually a creation. It's just a creation, and it is as it is. Our bads to our creation, when we judge one of our identities as bad, it only serves to really distort the primary identity, and it puts us into resistance to them, which makes them continue to exist. It causes them to persist. So we can't ever really discreate the identities as long as we're judging it as bad, have an opinion that it's bad, okay? And so first we must know that nothing is good or bad except in our mind as we create it to be that way. Things are negative and positive in terms of, you know, is this serving me? It's negative. If it's not serving me and I keep doing it, it's negative. But that doesn't make it bad. It's just not helping me at this moment, or it's not benefiting me for what I want to create in this moment. If we learn to evaluate things in terms of negative and positive rather than good and bad, then we won't be in this trap of continuing to have creations persist. So nothing is good or bad except in our minds as we create it to be that way, okay? Our creations are not bad. They are just our creations, and they're temporary creations at that, okay? So that's one guideline to remember, okay? Another guideline to remember is the negative identity, all identities actually are created reality. Actually, you can say this whole realm of that we're in is a created reality, okay? It's not truth, though. There's a difference between a reality and truth, okay? No matter how real our reality is to us, like no matter how real our reality of I am not good enough or I'm poor is real to us, it is not truth. Truth can never be destroyed. Truth can never be discreated. But created reality can be. And if you look around you, you see nothing but created reality being shifted all the time. I mean, you know, if you look at this earth, there is civilization upon civilization. When in archaeology, they discover all these layers of civilizations on top of one another. They come and they go. They're created and then they're discreated, okay? And you could say we're living in a world of where things are of created reality, but they're not truth, meaning that they're not eternal, okay? So you have to know the difference between a reality and truth. So a reality is something that gets created by us creator beings, okay? But they're not truth. What is truth? Well, the truth is that we are infinite beings made in love and utter goodness, okay? And nothing, no created reality, no identity about ourselves that we create in this experience can ever change that fact one iota, not one tiny bit. Who we are is infinite. We can never be destroyed. We are eternal and we are timeless. That is the truth with a capital T. Okay? So when we know who we are at that level of our being, that's the truth. And yet we as creator beings, as these infinite beings, create these realities to have the experience of our creative power. Okay? So these identities are created reality. They're not truth, okay? And who we are at our core is truth, okay? We are an infinite being. That's guideline number two. Guideline number three, we are the creator. And whatever we create, we can discreate. Whatever realities we create can be discreated, okay? And thus, so we don't believe in the eternalness of our realities, okay? So we don't believe in our realities because they're not the eternal truth. We created it, and we can discreate it. And here's another one, and I think I mentioned that this before. No creation is bigger No created reality is bigger or more powerful than that which created it. So no creation is bigger or more powerful than its creator. Okay, that's guideline number three. We're the creator. What we can create, we can discreate, and no creation is bigger than the created. Fourth guideline, don't take it seriously. I know I said you have to be in the middle of the experience when you're discreating it, but it's almost like learning how to have different awarenesses at once. So at the same time that you're sitting in it, what I mean by don't take it seriously, it's not truth, okay? So it's just energy. It's an energy. Created reality is made up of energy. Remember I said the negative identity masses are energies, okay? So at some level you have to not believe in it. And when you can relax and loosen up and just look at it as an exploration, I'm going to explore this identity that I created. I created this. I'm the creator of this. I created this identity, this idea about myself that I'm nothing. Okay, I created this identity, and I'm going to sit here and explore what that feels like, and I'm going to explore the experience of it, okay? But it's not bigger than me, and it's a created reality. It's not truth. So it can never actually hurt me, okay? So it's just energy, and I'm going to explore my creative power, okay? And it may be painful, okay, because these negative identities can be painful, but don't believe in it as the truth, okay? So we can flow it, and we feel the energy to discharge, and we want to actually experience it because that's what's going to allow it to discharge. And pain is one thing. Suffering is another thing. And we suffer when we continue to resist the pain. So when we allow ourselves to feel what an experience feels like, it will actually begin to move on its own. So we release the resistance and we feel our experience, okay? So that's guideline number four. And last guideline, number five, remember when the emotional charge is very strong, remind yourself, look how strong my creation is. That's actually good because that means it's showing how powerful we are. And with that same power that I use to create it, it takes a tremendous amount of power to convince ourselves that we're the opposite of who we are. If we're these infinite beings made in wisdom, power, and valuable, and then we come down and we create ourselves to be the opposite of who we are, and then we judge it as bad to keep experiencing it until we energize it over time, until we actually put ourselves into a trance to believe that we are, you know, less than who we really are, it takes a huge amount of power to do that, to fool ourselves in that way. So when an creation is really, when an energy from a creation is really strong, remind yourself, wow, my God, that this is proof of my creative power. I must be a very, very, very powerful being to have really convinced myself that this is so real, to be feeling like it's just so real. So you want to begin to appreciate your creative power, and you want to know that the same power that you use to create it is the same power that you're going to use to discreate it. And you're going to use that same power to not only discreate, but then to create anew, you're going to use that same power to begin to energize even more the positive identities that you desire, okay? So those are sort of some guidelines to use when resistance comes up to help you work with the resistance, okay? So first you must, if there's resistance, you must discreate your bad, okay, and all the resistance and all the negative emotional charge around all of the resistance. That's the first thing. And then once you do that, when you just create all the creation of bads and the emotional charge, the pain will, the emotional kind of charge, that the fireworks of the emotions will be gone, and you'll be in space to it. You'll feel like this just emotional space, like this tranquility, okay? That's how you know. That lets you know you've just created the resistance, okay? You'll be in like a calm state, okay? Okay, so that means you've just created the bad. But here's an important point you must keep in mind, though. That's only the first part of it, okay? So you've just created the bad. Now you must also go and just create the actual identity. So remember I said there are three parts. There's the identity, there's the creation of bad, and there's all the emotional charge from all of this. So when you discreate and a lot of the emotional charge comes from the resistance. So when you discreate the creation of bad and the resistance and the emotional charge, you've discreated those two elements. Then you have to also discreate the identity, because everything stems from the identity, okay? If you just create all the emotional charge and you don't actually just create the identity will just go back into your subconscious. So it's really important to really find these identities and really discreate the identities. And actually you'll get to a point where you can begin to feel some of the emotional charge and be able to not have it interfere with your being able to discreate the identity. Once you really learn to work with the resistance, it'll lessen to the point where you'll still be able to feel some resistance, but you'll be able to do it all at once, okay? So, but it's important to actually discreate the identity, the negative identity, okay? And remember, they're more subtle energies, they're quieter, okay? And so sometimes they can be overlooked because they're quieter and they're subtle, and you'll think, oh, I got it all, but that's not true. So you want to really look to see, you know, the identities. And because, like I said, if you don't discreate the identity, then you won't really be able to achieve the real change in your being, because your identity is who you're being, and that's the essence, and everything stems from the essence. So really it's vitally important that you make sure that after you get rid of all the fireworks that you really go back and you discreate the identity. Okay, and one way to, and I want to share that one way to find out one way to find out a negative identity is to actually do a positive, to say to yourself a positive identity, okay? Because when you tell yourself a positive identity, when you go into a positive identity about something, it will often activate any kind of negative identity that's the opposite of that. And that's how you can really tell what negative identities you really have going on. And that's why positive affirmations don't really work for a lot of people. Because, for instance, if you're saying a lot of people do positive affirmations about money or being rich or wealthy, and so you can say, you know, I am rich, I am wealthy. And frequently when you do that, what will happen is, deep inside, there'll be a part of you that'll be going, oh, who are you kidding? Who are you kidding? You're not rich. You're not wealthy. You're poor. You're pathetic. These are identities. These are negative identities. So, and what happens is, so people start saying these positive affirmations and all this kind of stuff, and they can only do it so long because it's going to activate all the places where there are negative identities. And when you don't know how to actually discreate or work with the negative identities, it can be very painful. Here you are saying all these positive affirmations, and it's triggering these negative identities, and you're in pain about these negative identities, and you don't know what to do with them. So people just stop. They stop saying these positive affirmations, and that's why. But you can use the positive to activate the negatives, so you can see what's still kind of lurking, so you can see which negative identities are really still operating within you. And that's a good way to actually begin to find negative identities, is to use a positive identity as much to try to activate the negative identities. And you can use that in this process to make sure that you've gotten all of the negative identities. If you can do this process and then state a positive and you still feel in space and peace about it, and you know, at least for this time being, for the amount of negative energy that's come up, that you've discharged that. So that's another important tool that you can use to begin to identify or begin to find negative identities. Okay, so that's the talk for today. And next week I will go into some examples, like from my own personal life, but we're kind of running out of time and I want to go on to cardiology, so I am going to move on. But next week I will give a concrete example from an identity that I've just created. And actually I'm still working on this one. And remember, you know, this is all done in layers. It's not all going to happen overnight. And it's not going to take the time that it took. I mean, a lot of these identities have been created over, I believe, lifetimes, okay? It's not going to take lifetimes to discreate them. Maybe it'll take two or three. I'm not really sure. It just depends on, you know, the kind of mass we have built up. But what you will be able to do is to be able to control your inner experience no matter what happens to you. And you won't be dependent on having outside events having to be a certain way or having people show, needing people to show up a certain way in order for you to feel good about yourself. And that's freedom indeed. Okay, so that is the topic for today. And now I'm going to go over the cards a bit. Okay, and let's see. Science of the cards. It's an ancient system said to date back to Atlantis, and it's really a calendar of our Earth's, represents our Earth's calendar, okay? 52 cards in the deck represent the 52 weeks in our year. 13 cards in each suit represent the 13 lunar cycles in each year. The four suits represent the four seasons. If you add up the numerical value of the cards plus the joker, it adds up to 355 days and a quarter, which is the number of days in our year. The joker, by the way, is the numeric value of the joker is one and a quarter, and there's only one birthday that is represented by the joker, and that's December 31st. And we really don't read for the joker because they can be anything that they choose to be. Some famous jokers are Anthony Hopkins and Val Kilmer, and if you see them in movies, you'll see they always play these different characters, and they always seem to morph into these different characters. Anthony Hopkins is amazing at that. I've seen him in so many different things, and he really I don't know. Anyway, so check it out if you want. Okay, so it's really a representation of our Earth's calendar, and there are three main ways to use this system. One is to help you better understand yourself, because if you know your birth card and the planetary ruling card, it really, in each card has a karmic package. Each card has its gifts and its challenges, and when you know them, it helps you to understand yourself better. You actually do know yourself, but it actually verifies who you've known yourself to be, and I think in a lot of ways it helps. I know it helped me just begin to honor who I was and to own it and to own my gifts and talents and to really just accept the challenges that I came in here with. Okay, that's one thing. And the other thing is this system also has a record for each year of our birth, each year of our life, excuse me. So for each year of our life, it's like it's an ancient esoteric math, and it's a system called quadration. And through this process called quadration, every year the cards are in a particular spot in the grand solar spread, and they're kind of read a certain way. So there is a set of cards for each birth card for each year of our life, okay? And the energies of these cards are set. I'm not actually dealing with any kind of cards, okay? The symbols of the cards is what I'm dealing with. So each of the card symbols represent certain things, okay? And so there's a set of energies that are actually calculated for each birth card for each year, all right? And each year we can read these energies for each of your birth card and each of your planetary ruling cards, and they let us know what energies are present for that year. And when we learn to harmonize ourselves in alignment with the energies that are present, you'll find that your life will actually be successful. And by successful, I'm describing successful as you will actually become more and more yourself. You will actually grow spiritually, and you just actually expand into who you came here to be. That's what I mean by success, okay? I know success is different for each person, but that's what I mean by it, okay? When you learn to harmonize yourself with this, like you work in alignment with the energies that are present, and you're not fighting or resisting things that are happening, you actually then begin to walk in alignment with them, and things just tend to kind of evolve much better that way, or our experience of our life actually begins to evolve because we're not resisting, you know, what's happening. We're actually going with the flow of it, and we're actually learning it. And now, this is an interesting question I think people come. Now, these energies are calculated, and they're set, okay? They don't change. I can read for each person in context to what's going on in their life. Okay, so that's how it's different for each person. But these energies are sort of set. Now, that leads us to the question of free will. Do we have free will or do we not have free will? And this is a question in some of my other groups that has sort of been, you know, bantied around. And what I'm kind of coming to is that I don't believe. I believe that there is a that we come in. We have destiny. That there is a part of ourselves, a part of ourselves that has not carnated in, that has a plan, okay, for our life. And so in that way, I don't believe we have free will. But we have to, like, act, live as if we do have free will. It's like a paradox, okay? It's like, it's, in some ways, our life has been sort of mapped out for us on that level, on a deeper level, okay? And there are just some things that we're not going to be able to do because the deeper part of us, this bigger part of us, has a plan, okay? And it won't really let us deviate from that plan. And so in that sense, I think, you know, it's not fuel in that. But in some ways, we have to act as if we have free will. So anyway, that's just my little take on it. But anyway, these energies are set, okay? And when we learn to harmonize with these energies, we'll find that we, you know, our lives will just unfold much more enjoyably. That's the second aspect of using it. The third is relationships. We can compare our cards to another person's cards, and this will tell us what the dynamics will be between two people, okay? And you can do this for intimate relationships, friends, or business. And if you want a report, I have a software that can generate a report. They're very inexpensive, like $19.95 for one, and if you buy more than one, it, the price goes down. And where you can I can do relationships readings. So that those are the three areas that this system is used in, and it's very accurate. It's the most accurate system I have come across. Okay, so that's about the cards. And today is September 28th, and today is a Nine of Hearts birth card. Someone who's born today would be a Nine of Hearts birth card and a Five of Diamonds ruling card. Okay, again, nine is one of the spiritual numbers in the deck, the other being a seven. Anyone who's a nine really has come here to let go of something. It's a card of completion. It's a card of letting go, and it's a card of giving, and it's a universal number, spiritual number, meaning giving in a big way, giving to humanity. So someone who's born this day who's a Nine of Hearts, this is they would be about universal love. Love is relationships. Hearts are relationships. It's love. So it would be about universal love. It's about loving humanity, surrendering to the higher will of love for all, okay? And many will find a way to express this in their work. They'll be counselors, teachers, caregivers of some kind. And some take it to a much larger arena and create things that will benefit millions of people, like Hillary Clinton. She's a Nine of Hearts. She's a famous Nine of Hearts, and she is using this Nine of Hearts, you know, universal love in a big way, affecting the whole planet. And her, so that's an example. This is also a semi-fixed card. There are seven cards of the 52 that are in a special family. Three of them are fixed cards, and four are semi-fixed. And the four are each paired with another. So the four are in two pairs. And so a Nine of Hearts is paired with the Seven of Diamonds. So this is someone who has two of the spiritual numbers. So this person would really have to, you know, go to the universal, go to the spiritual. And it also sits in the Saturn column in both the grand solar spread and the spiritual spread. So they really have to, like, walk the straight and narrow, okay, so because of this double Saturn. And because they have to give so much, sometimes, you know, their life path can be very challenging because they're giving, giving, giving. And sometimes it can feel like, you know, where are they receiving in return, okay? And also, too, with a Nine of Hearts person could tend to be codependent, and they can tend to try to save people. And trying to save anybody in relationships is not a good combination. It doesn't work, okay? So, you know, they can be codependent, picking people whom they like to save, and they're also fixed in their love habits and in the way they approach love. And so between those two things, sometimes they can have personal challenges when it comes to relationship, okay? So they need to learn to, let people be themselves and that they can't save anybody. And if they want to give that tendency to give, they need to give it in a broader way, not in their personal relationships, okay? But when they align themselves with the higher purpose, that brings them their greatest fulfillment because they're here to really give in a large way and on a universal way and universal love, okay, and not focusing that in their personal relationships. Now, Five of Diamonds would make this a person who would be very restless because five is about change. And all fives dislike routine, and they abhor anything that would limit their freedom, okay? And they can be perpetual wanderers. They don't like to settle down because they love to explore. They love new things, okay? And they really need to find work that allows them to express this inner restlessness, to allow them to be able to maybe travel, to not be tied down, to not have something where they have to sit at a desk, okay? So, and you can imagine if you have this within you, it could be hard to, you know, you really need to pick your type of work very carefully, you know, because if you pick something where you're sitting at a desk or you have a lot of restrictions on you, well, it's not going to work out that well, okay? And they also have a nine of diamonds as a karma card. So this person born today would have a lot of spiritual energy. There would be a lot of giving. This person would have to really give in order to have a successful life, you know. And nine of diamonds means a loss in some kind. It's loss of value. It's change of value, loss of values, loss of money could be. So they may experience loss of money at some point in their life, but what they learn from that is that when they let go, and I think, you know, what we learn when we let go is that it leaves a space for something new to come in, okay? But anyway, their five of diamonds, they have to be inherently spiritual because of this nine of diamonds too. So this person would be would have not the easiest life path, but what they have come here to do is to learn to complete some cycle. A nine is always completing some cycle. And they have to learn how to love universally, to give universally, to let go of anything they've been holding on to. And when they come into an alignment with something that's bigger than themselves, with a deeper purpose, they will find fulfillment. Okay, so that's the class, and I am just going to see if anyone wants to say. Okay, well, that's the class. Does anyone want to say goodbye, hello? Hello, goodbye.
Bye, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Goodbye, friend.
Okay, Kevin, talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
All right, so I'll be here next week, same time. Okay, everyone, thank you for joining me. I enjoyed it. All right, have a wonderful day. Bye.
Bye-bye.